Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Jope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
Yes, it is. Yesterday, to start, we parsed a couple of Sean McDermott quotes. Or it was really one from yesterday and one from last week. Maybe two from yesterday and one from last week. A collection of moments here of late where McDermott sounded not too at ease with certain things about his team. Last week it was injuries. Yesterday it was safeties. Also about how at wide receiver, after the top three, they have to figure out what is going to happen. So, there's a couple of things with that. There's that it's what he's saying, and then there's also like why he's saying it. You know, with safety, we did both. It makes sense for him to say, to be concerned about that. That makes sense. Doesn't have to be right or, you know, how you feel, but it makes sense. And then, you know, is it something else that he was willing to say it in public? You know, what does it say about Bishop or just how he's looking at things, what he's trying to, if there is ever like, if there is here a longer game that he's playing, trying to get certain messages across. Today we have Joe Brady saying what?
He loves everyone.
Wideouts are.
Good cop, bad
is
cop.
Is that possible?
Good cop, bad cop.
I have yet to hear Brady ever say anything that I can work with. Like, it's just always kind of one-way traffic. Everything's always exactly how we want it. And it then comes with the rest of, you know, the rest of the sauce. You know, well, you can always get better, that kind of stuff. Could you love their scene at wide receiver? Could you?
Sure, you can choose to love anything.
How could you love Shakir? Well, how could you? That you win. It's a choice. I guess if it's a choice,
right.
Just say you do. Right? We've done that in life.
Yeah, sorry. No, I'm not trying to defuse you, but like that's, you know.
He doesn't have Shakir. They're coming off a shutout. Like, okay, Mike White, Mitchell Trubisky against mostly the Bears backups, but I couldn't. I mean, I've got a third-year guy in Tyrell Shavers that's like my lead story at the position so far, and who's to say if that even matters? Elijah Moore, what? Curtis Samuel, what? Palmer, a little bit. Coleman seems to qualify as like one of the top stories of camp because he's made a few plays in practice. So I don't know. I don't know how you could really love it.
I think it's a choice. That's really it. I think what I think you're doing, what you sound to me like you're doing, basing that entirely on what the preseason games have looked like.
Well,
and you know, that's what we see most of, right? I mean, other than some clips here and there that the team, well, I mean, you know, reporters also tweet stuff too, but you know, you're going to get the slow motion highlights from practice of anybody on the team making a good play, a good catch. But we're not seeing rep over rep over rep over rep, and we're certainly not watching it back again later in the evening on film like he is. So there's a larger sample size that he's dealing with. Whereas, you know, in the games, yeah, Shavers, we talk more about Shavers because he's in a battle to get on the team, and it's a, you know, reasonably compelling story because he's been close, you know, closer last year than he was the year before that, but you know, that's an investment in the idea that he'll make it. So he gets a lot of conversation, probably disproportionately so to what he'll ultimately mean to the team, should he even make it. Whereas someone like Coleman and Palmer, and even Shakir while he's hurt, like even McDermott said, we know who the top three are. Like there's no real debate about Coleman. You can just decide whether you care about what it sounds like he looks like in these practices, or you can just not, you know, just not do anything with that, because mostly what you're going to hear from anyone is, oh, it's good. It really looks good. It's going great. You know, that's with, you know, inside the team wearing a, you know, a team polo shirt. That's what you're going to get. But I think Coleman has been, like, I'm choosing to buy on Coleman. We'll see if I'm a chump by October or November, but I'm buying that he has improved, and I'm counting on him to matter. So, you know, it sort of what you want to do with what a coach sounds like about them often depends on how predisposed or not you are to agreeing with it before you've even heard it. Like, if I'm walking around thinking, man, I like what I'm hearing about Coleman. I like how various reporters I'm following, of course, including our Sal Capaccio, are talking about him. And then you hear the coach say he's made great progress in this area and that area. And you're just sort of nodding going, yeah, all right, yeah. And if you don't pay any attention to that stuff or don't buy it at all, you're going to hear it and just go, it's just fluff. It's the standard coach speak stuff. So, like, where you come in, what your point of entry is, and how you feel about a certain subject before you even hear the coach talk is going to slant how you feel about it, probably.
You're saying we're confirming our priors here on the side of the room?
Yeah, sure, to an extent. And
probably.
Right now my priors are I'm buying Coleman. And, you know,
the fact that Shakir is not even there makes it hard for me to listen to how he loves the group right now. He doesn't even have his best guy.
What is that? He knows his best guy is going to be back, or I think he's reasonably confident his best guy is going to be back. So it's a known commodity. He knows what he's got there.
That's different, I think, but that's right. Of course that would be right. Just seems like something that would maybe slow you down. Or he's just not worried about it at all. You know, he'll be back week one. I think an interesting thing might be happening in the NFL right now with injuries. And Shakir, I can only say, might be an example of it. So he had the high ankle sprain. And one of the first things McDermott said when alluding to it was how he's had that before. He said he was, you know, I don't know his exact quote, but he was, you know, wanted to be cautious with Shakir because he's had this injury before. If it happens to be an injury that would be harder to recover from a second time, I don't know. But, you know, at first he sounded kind of worried by saying that, and then next time around it was, what I'm hearing is he should be good for the opener. Teams are playing it way more carefully than ever with injuries. We know that. They admit that. And yesterday with Bishop as one example, we talked about how, well, you know, here's McDermott talking about how he hasn't had consistency there. He hasn't really had enough of Bishop yet, I think he would say. And is that some part the new world where it's just we've decided everything has been optimized and we've just decided as a society that as a football player, it's not worth it.
Being careful is prudent. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't get your odds of getting what you want as McDermott from Bishop or any other player in 2025 are worse necessarily than they would have been 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's possible without saying it. And, you know, I'll bet he would tell you he doesn't want to sound like he's admonishing someone for being in the trainer's room again, just to, you know, use a phrase that is pretty familiar to people.
That's right, too.
But it might very well be that somewhere in, like, it comes out when he's talking that, oh, he's in the tub again. You know, like, he's, oh, again with him? You know, like, I don't know how it works if every morning he gets, you know, an email from trainers or talks with them and they tell him, like, here's what we think this guy and this guy and this guy, and it's a pretty long list. It has been frequently this summer. Here's what we think they can do. And, you know, maybe when he sees Bishop's name there, it's just like, oh. Like, I'm really counting on this guy. We are counting on this guy. I really need him. And I know what he needs to do and be exposed to get ready. And we're just not able to do it. And, man, maybe a part of him wishes he could push through it.
Right. So he's just one example that may or may not even sort of apply here. But I think if you have everybody is more careful with injuries, any sort of misstep, and you're off, right? That's what we're seeing. We just had Lamar Jackson today go down on a play, knocked down after a throw. They see him flexing his hand and leaving practice. 5 minutes later, they're saying it's a foot thing. I mean, it's just sort of like, it used to be that, and it's not confusing why it's different. It used to be that these kind of reports would take you pretty quickly to, all right, this is bad. You know, somebody's leaving practice, carted off. Mm-hmm. This is bad. What's logical? Team's more cautious. Anything, almost, you're going to leave practice. Like anything. They're going to check you out, put some ice on it, check you back tomorrow. We're going to do that. Now you have the Bills. It goes back like to last week. You have the Bills with 15 or so names on the injury report. Coach sounding a little uptight about it. It's possible that, and Shakir would be my example for this, I think, also a guess, but it's possible that a lot of these injuries are just not a big thing. It's still, you know, early, it's still mm-hmm. a month from the season at that time, and he wants, it makes sense for him, like on Bishop, he wants to evaluate, he wants his whole team there so we can compare and he can try things and sort of get somewhere here, but he doesn't have that. And that's the league now. I just, saying all this is sort of background for Shakir, because ever since that second time around to my ears on from McDermott, it's okay, Shakir is okay. Like they know it.
Yeah.
And he's not going to play in the preseason anyway.
Right.
So maybe I'd want to guess that his injury is not bad. And here's Brady today with this quote. Like he kind of knows that.
Sure. And it makes sense that they would be extra careful with Shakir. It does sort of fly in the face a little bit of loving the whole room, 1 through 8 or whatever it was. I think that's exactly what Brady said, 1 through 8. I don't think anyone should mistake that for they're going to keep 8 receivers, because that would be insanity. That you can afford – there's no crisis around Shakir. They know who he is. They know what he is. They know what kind of chemistry he's already developed pretty quickly with Josh Allen. And so there's no – He's not someone that you're going to say he needs the reps. He needs time on task. He needs any of it. Like the other receivers, like Curtis Samuel as an example, who's been out, he's a known commodity within the league, but he was not available most of last summer and hindered by injury most of last year, showed some of what he was capable of later on in the year, but now we're back hoping for a full off season with him, get him to develop with Allen, you know, nuanced little even like gestures and just whatever happens between a quarterback and a pass catcher. And that hasn't happened with Samuel. So even though he's a much more experienced player than Shakir, he's not much more experienced playing here with Josh Allen and in this system, where Shakir could miss all of this and be on a cruise boat and come in here on Labor Day and be like, okay, give me my uniform. You know, provided he's, you know, not just eating, you know, cannolis the whole time he's on the cruise ship.
Oh, that late night pizza.
And you know, it's going to be fine. There's not a crisis around an injury to a player that is absolutely has set a standard that they accept. Like, we know who this guy is. So everybody else, not everybody else, but certain guys, the guys we've talked about here, Bishop, certainly Samuel, who I'm using as an example, even a newer guy like Elijah Moore, we need these guys out here. They have not helped us separate them. It's still, you know, it is kind of interesting to me that Brady uses the larger group, whereas McDermott told you yesterday, I know who this top half of the roster is. I have no idea about 3 through 8 or 12 or how many guys there are here. And Brady's just like, yeah, everybody's good. You know, I kind of doubt that. I mean, they're all not candidates to make the team. But Shakir's absence to me is immaterial to the comment. Like I wouldn't take any, you know, him not being there. It's like Brady, it's another indication that they're confident he's going to be here. Cause I think if they were more worried about him, then maybe they wouldn't sound like that, or he wouldn't sound like that.
Right. That's what I mean. If he loves where their receivers are right now, he might have just sort of taken Shakir for granted at this point.
Right.
Cause he's not practicing or anything like that. So, okay, there were a couple of reports this morning that the Vikings, among a couple of other teams, are looking for veteran receivers to trade for. So weird. Again, it's one of these where at least two reporters had that at the same time. Like, it's that's on your that's scheduled on your phone to tweet that the Vikings are calling around on receivers. I mean, we don't have anybody, or do we?
That is that could be of interest. I mean, how much sweetener do I have to throw into the pot to get someone to take Curtis Samuel off my hands with the contract? Like, that is the ideal scenario to me. Irrespective of, Joe Brady loves him. He had a great year with him in Carolina 6 years ago or whenever the hell that was. And, you know, Brady loves everyone. He doesn't have to be cold and calculated about this. He's coaching guys to get the best out of them, so he's going to sound that way. If I'm Brandon Bean, I'm trying to put together my receiver room. I'm also maybe trying to open up cap room for who knows what else. Something to supplement their defense, their safety room, their pass rush. I don't know. If they could trade Samuel for, like, the last pick in the draft, I'd throw in a fifth or something just to try to make that happen.
The trade is, whether it's Curtis Samuel or someone else, these kind of trades are the player and a 27-7th for a 26-7th.
Fine, whatever.
Move up a year.
Even if it's got to be more than that. I said a fifth. I think that, because that would alleviate. There's a massive is a little strong. It's not Stephon Diggs money, but the problem you have with just releasing Samuel, if you don't trust he's going to be healthy and you feel like other guys have outperformed him or are more dependable or some combination thereof, you're saving very little money. A couple $100,000, I think, is all you're saving. So you're going to have dead money for this guy not on your team, whereas if you can find someone to trade him to, you're saving almost the entirety of that money. And, you know, I would assume they would have a use for that. And that's, to me, optimal, because I don't know how you could trust Sammy. You could love what he is when he's healthy, but he has rarely been healthy when he's been here. And he's had other seasons where this has been the story with him. Staying on the field is hard. So however much you want to count on availability and dependability, that's the guy that, if you've got a logjam of him, Elijah Moore, Laviska Shenault, and Tyrell Shavers, Samuel is the best idea if I can trade him to move, I think. Because I don't know how much more you should expect to get out of him than you would out of any of those other guys. I think if they're all peak health and available all the time, he's the most accomplished of the group and maybe therefore the best, but I can't rely on it. So that leaves me wanting to remove him from the equation. And I feel like the money makes him harder to just release. And that's not how I want to put my team together, right? I would rather be able to choose the guy that I think is going to be able to do more for me, even if it's just because he'll be available more. And that's, you know, that requires a lot of guesswork, because if he's healthy now, you know, maybe he'll be healthy all year. Or maybe he's going to stub his toe again. So that's the player that I would like most to see them find their way clear of, but I think it's the hardest to do because of the money.
You know, the counterpoint is simply, why am I trading anybody for a draft pick right now? You would need to make, for me, like, they would need to make use of the cap room. There would have to be some second part to it, which may be, you know, there might be out there for them. But I was thinking, just from not even from a Bill standpoint, about this Minnesota report and racking my brain for, like, who would you be able to get? And my first instinct is to eliminate all the good teams, because why are they giving veteran receivers away? It's not the time of year to be maneuvering around the salary cap. You might have to escape from a situation or two, and that could be this.
Mm-hmm.
But you sort of take anybody that's who's a receiver that has been rumored or talked about as a trade piece potentially this offseason, Tyreek Hill. Can you imagine 2 weeks before the season, Miami trading Tyreek Hill? I mean, for whatever the parameters, you just sort of cut your legs out before week one. Who's going to do that? So it wouldn't be somebody. I mean, that could happen, but wow.
So, yeah, I don't think it's someone that's, like, formerly the best receiver in the league, like, you know, in recent memory.
It wouldn't be a player on a team that has any chance. Because why am I, unless it's somebody closer to irrelevant, in which case, what is Minnesota's incentive? Minnesota is going to play without Jordan Addison for three games. They have Jefferson, they have Hockenson, they have a young quarterback that they're trying to make work.
But they've got other receiver injuries that are making the situation what it is.
They do, but like their kids, you know. Rondale Moore was a few years into his career. He's done for the season. Jalen Naylor, Felton, like they've just got a lot of unknown, and some of it's hurt, like you say. So what would they want to get out of it? They'd want, you know, maybe Samuel is kind of in the right class, somebody that has experience and is a little bit of a stopgap for them. And I don't know, it's a little too easy, but what Rondale Moore might have been is what Samuel could be. You know, Samuel gets typecast.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe something like that is possible. Yeah. I just don't know if the Bills would be inclined to move anybody like that when you're in this window.
The only reason you do it is because you're still making a bet. Your bet is, like I've already said, if he's healthy, you believe in him. He's probably the best of that group of guys. But you're betting, what do you want to bet on? Do you want to bet on him staying healthy and actually helping you? Or do you want to bet on one of the other guys that isn't as known, but might actually be as good a fit and be available for you? Maybe I'm giving up something if everyone's at their best, but I'm betting on that not being the case, and I can offload the money. Like, if the reason he stays here is because of the dead money, I almost don't care what I do with it. I just don't want it to be the reason that he's here instead of Elijah Moore or Laviska Shenault or whomever, because that's not optimal. That is a decision you just got to be like, okay, well, we're sort of stuck. And if you can unstick yourself, it'd be better to have that money in your hip pocket for something that comes up during the season. If someone is, you know, someone gets hurt, someone's available, I have the flexibility. And so I think that would be the course of action I would be trying to pursue. I have no idea how they're positioning it. They may feel like Samuel is so important and if he's healthy, could help them so much that they're willing to risk it. He may miss time or not be entirely himself if he's on the field, kind of like he was for most of the season last year. That might be the bet that they make. But the other half of that bet, the other side of that bet is availability, reliability, the money, and what have I got behind him, and can it reasonably replicate what he would give me? And they've got, you know, enough guys there to try to pick and choose from. You know, if they want to use him on jet sweeps, Laviska Shenault can probably do that for you. Elijah Moore can probably do that for you. So it's not like he has to be so vital. So I saw that news about Minnesota. The Jets were also mentioned as a team that might be looking for veteran, you know, established receiver or just receiver help in general. And really any team that's in that boat, I want my GM calling them about Samuel.
Is it only a wide receiver room that the offensive coordinator could love? Or, you know, am I trying too hard? 803-0550 for your calls on this and other Bills topics. We'll be here all day. Sigmund Bloom today and Sal Capaccio with his report coming up at, that'll be 5. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thanks for listening. Lines are open for your calls here on WGR.